It's time for Cofield and Company.
Third and seven, looking, now throwing down the sideline, and that ball is brought in, I believe, Chris Olave. What an amazing catch by Chris Olave. The Saints come into Carolina, Monday Night Football, week two, win it on the road, 20-17.
There's so much that we have to clean up, but it feels so good to clean it up when you win. We're 2-0, and I don't think that we've played at the level that we're all expecting to play at yet.
It's Cofield and Company in the Finley Toyota Studio on ESPN Las Vegas.
Wow, this feels like the old days. Feels like the old days. It's hard to get past it, isn't it? We always talk about our ex. We're checking in on him. Derek Carr, last night, double dip, Monday Night Football. By the way, it's Cofield and Company. Steve Cofield, Adam Hill is the company. Damon is here as well. Big Tuesday show on the way. Later this hour, our first guest of the day, Nikki Fargus. Nikki Fargus will be on the phone, Aces president. So we'll talk about the Aces and the rest of the playoffs. I say that as I'm virtually guaranteeing they make it to the finals. Might not be that easy. Might not be that easy, especially with the way the end of the season went. And Adam was saying, hey, it's all about the playoffs. Don't worry about the regular season. So we'll get the preview from the president of the Aces. So Derek Carr got it done again, and he did send that message you heard at the end there. He's doing this all for the city and his teammates, and he's having so much fun winning for them, which is an interesting approach. It was a weird game. It was a very weird game. The Saints were kind of ordinary again on offense, but how much do we chalk that up to Alvin Kamara is a really great player, and you and I, probably more than most around the country, brought it up repeatedly. Like, he had an incident here that was a really serious incident, and the NFL hadn't made a decision on Al Kamara. And if it was going to be six games, that was going to really be debilitating to the Saints. Now, as it turns out, he got, what, three, right?
Yep.
So he's back in the fourth game. They've survived about what they needed to survive. They needed to avoid a disaster, you know, going 0-3 without him. They're 2-0 right now, so they look fine. At least in eking past so-so opponents. But I think you can see the impact. I think. Or is this going to be the Saints all year where they're basically a couple of touchdowns and then, you know, put it on the shoulders or the foot of your the kicker you love?
Yeah. Blake Groupie?
The little kid?
Yeah. The child?
You said he looks like he's 14?
It's like Rookie of the Year when Henry Rowan Gardner was pitching
sure.
for the Cubs.
Sure.
This kid's kicking in the NFL. It's impressive. Look, I don't think you can take anything from the Saints right now.
You can't read.
Played two bad teams.
Okay. All right.
Well, I mean, look, you beat the team you're supposed to beat. Good. But I think this is kind of where, you know, we thought they'd be. They're in a division that's incredibly winnable because the division is bad. Go out and do it.
I will say it was disappointing that the Panthers were in the game at the very end. It's kind of weird defense down the stretch. I mean, it wasted a lot of time, so they didn't have much time left to attempt an onside kick, and then the kick didn't really bounce. But it wasn't like they blew him away, and it wasn't like Bryce Young was awesome until he got a little space at the end. So I'm not really sure how to read the Saints right now. I'm also not sure, Damon, I know that you feel still a little bent about Derek Carr. You know, you like him. Adam was probably the most honest person in the market who covered the Raiders about Derek Carr. Like, he gave us all sides of the story, and there's a side of the story that most of the country still doesn't know, that Derek has flaws. Derek can play games with his agent and media, and he can be a really sensitive guy, and when things are going wrong, he can get super sensitive, and then we know what we think happened with the Colts game last year where there was an explosion, something in the locker room, and Derek came out crying and then tried to throw other players under the bus. So he's not perfect, and he always had a lot of pressure as the Raiders guy. But I say Adam was that guy, but, you know, you went out to Southern California in fall camp, and were you the only guy to get Derek Carr from the Raiders media for, like, a good sit-down?
No.
Because you got there a day early, didn't you?
Yeah.
Remember that was your whole goal? You're like, oh, hopefully I get him before the rest of the media is here.
Yeah, everybody was going to go Friday, and then nobody even went Friday.
And then you went Thursday, and the Saints were kind of giving you the runaround, like, hey, what's going to happen here? And then I think DC, did he actually embrace you?
Yeah. He came running over.
Did he give you a bro hug?
Yeah.
Oh!
Yeah. Sometimes you have no choice.
You're there. Well, you know this. A bro hug can change everything. And maybe in that embrace, I mean, look, right? The arms? Ugh, right? When he, that picture of him flexing, maybe those big, strong arms of Derek Carr sort of changed Adam a little bit in his view of DC. And we've got a different Adam Hill now when we talk about Derek Carr.
Was it dap one hand? Was it just come in for a side hug?
That was the, it was the one hand pull in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a big guy, but he's very strong.
I am.
Did he try to pull you in and you know
he did.
His dominance?
I mean, it was just kind of a weird.
He did. You were chest to chest,
kind
right?
Of was,
you were chest to chest?
Was what it was.
Were you chest to chest?
I mean, I didn't analyze it in my mind enough.
He did this. He kept the hips back. You dropped
He did the thing
out.
Where as we were approaching, he kind of pointed up and then we just both jumped. You know, he did the, let's go up.
Like, no, stop. That would have been so awesome. Adam jumps into Derek Carr. He's out for the year.
Yeah.
No, he falls the wrong way.
It was bad.
Adam plants him. Or vice versa. We found out how if Derek Carr really has muscle behind those muscles, and he annihilated you.
Oh, if they go chest to chest, Adam's flying back.
Are you sure? Well, you really like Derek Carr. Adam's a big guy.
Pretty strong. Much stronger than you think.
Pretty strong. Yeah.
Much stronger than you think.
Yeah. We know he can take a good punch. We can't tell the story of him taking 36.
Yeah, 36.
36 punches over Casino Royale trying to cover me up after I got cold cocked.
Didn't fall.
You did not go down. I blacked out for a second. I had the lights turn out. And I was like, okay. I don't know if I still have that beard, but anyway, Adam, you know, he's a big, strong guy.
Sure.
So that embrace with Derek Carr, I don't know what kind of Saints coverage we're going to get this year.
I just said I don't think they played anybody. I don't think you can judge anything from what they've done.
I think as the season goes along, if Derek Carr has some rough moments, I think, like I was going to be with Aaron Rodgers, I think you'll be very, very much on Derek's side and try to come up with angles to, well, you know, this and that, Derek's trying to do this. Might send out like 6 tweets in a row, kind of giving the voice of Derek Carr.
No.
You don't think so?
That'll be Harvester Sports.
That's right. You love Harvester Sports, the Carr family podcast.
Yeah.
That filled us in late last season and all in the offseason.
Yeah. Who's now attacking the Raiders for their usage of Hunter Renfro?
They're still on. What?
Yes.
They're still on it?
Hunter's their guy.
Stop.
Yeah.
There's no official connection, right?
No, they're just friends. Well,
I didn't know that was happening.
Jesus.
Right.
Yeah, it's the connection.
Oh, okay.
One catch over 2 games, something's got to be up.
Well, we're going to get to it. We're going to get to it.
Our Harvester says they need to use them more.
I will tell you this. And you know what, Damon? You put a note in the rundown. What was the Carr support that he needed?
It was a Josh Dubow tweet where it was the Raiders were with Derek Carr were 7 and whatever the record is, obviously 7 and a losing record, where the Raiders score under 20 points. The Saints score under 20 points. They're 2-0. So all he needed was a little help. That's all Derek and the Carr supporters were saying all along.
Oh, okay, now I get it.
9 years of no help.
They've yet to score 20 points, and they're 2-0.
Exactly. If the Raiders could have provided him with that type of help on the defensive end, who knows where DC is.
Now he's got a D.
It's, what, 10 straight games where they haven't allowed 20 points?
Yeah, the Saints defense is good.
Do we have the highlight of this is the other one. How about this connection with this Rashid Shaheed? And I just put I wanted Carr to Rashid highlight. I just can't get I want to do it backwards. Rashid Shaheed. Is that right?
Rashid Shaheed.
He is freaking fast. And Carr loves him.
Carr, they pick up the pressure, and he's looking to launch downfield. And caught! Shaheed! Deep ball.
There you go. The connection's there. Did you see the video, the mashup video after the first game? Where they had Carr on the sideline. He's like, well, I want to go deep. All right. Let's go.
Be ready to catch.
Let's go, Rashid. Run. And then when he completes the pass, he's just running everywhere. Like, yeah. The joy is back.
Well, he did say before yesterday's game, he's having more fun than he ever had playing football.
I believe him. When times are good, he has a lot of fun.
Yeah. Sure, it'll be the same when, you know, they're 4-8.
Well, what? When the Raiders are? No. He'll have fun if the Raiders are 4-8.
No.
Harvester Schwartz will be going crazy.
I don't think they're going to be 4-8. I think they're going to keep winning because the division is not good.
We'll see. They don't just play the division.
Yeah, but, they have enough division games to stay afloat.
So we know now after the embrace heard around the world or felt around the world that Adam is very much a Derek Carr guy.
Sure.
You've always been a running back guy, and I really don't want to open the floor for another one of your impassioned rants, because you really do get worked up over this, but an injury's happened, and luckily Nick Chubb got his money, at least one deal. Yeah. Sadly, he's never getting another deal again.
No.
And this is the risk with the running backs. I mean, did you guys all watch it at least once?
Yeah, it's rough.
Did you want to watch it over and over and over again?
No.
I watched it once, and I can't remember, not to get graphic, but did the leg turn outside or forward?
It bent forward.
Right, like your knee went down towards your shin.
Yeah.
Not the fold, like up.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
either way, those suck. And then folding in sucks.
Terrible.
It's only supposed to go backwards.
It was terrible.
It's the worst. Poor Nick Chubb.
And I think they do have an out after this year. So.
Oh, come on. Yeah. It was 3 for 36. Only like 25 was guaranteed.
17 guaranteed.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It sucks. And I'm sure on the other side, people that don't care or, you know, the team side will say, see, this is why you don't pay running backs. Like, this could be it for him as a very high-level player.
It was interesting. I thought I came up with something brilliant last night. It really wasn't that brilliant. But it was actually backed up by a caller on Freddie and Harry is now the lead in show.
There
right?
you go.
Freddie and Harry. So Harry Douglas is there, who played 10 years in the NFL. A guy calls in, and he's like, I wanted to talk about running backs and the injuries and more injuries now. And he's like, I played college football. I played running back. And he starts giving out a good theory about how running backs now, for the most part, are just – it's just them. Like, there ain't no lead blocker anymore to fend guys off. I mean, there are blockers, but it really is the only position where you're gang tackled. Like, you're almost virtually guaranteed to be tackled by 2, 3, 4, or 5 people.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen that much to quarterbacks, and if you do it, it's a flag. It doesn't happen to receivers a bunch. What, 2 guys get them?
They're out in space.
I mean, you can get annihilated, but you're not like – and then you're not stood up. I swear to God, there are more situations now. Why does the NFL allow this, and college does too? If we're about safety, and it is the fault, I guess, of the offense, and, you know, keep churning, but why aren't those plays whistled dead, like, really quick? Because you see the benefit of it sometimes where the entire team, both teams just turn into, like, an 8-man ball, and they're going to roll back or roll forward. But it also gives the opportunity for people to just freaking dig in. And that's the other one. They're punching at the ball. Like, the running back really is. It's like a lone wolf out there sometimes.
Yeah. And in this case, it looked like he was kind of stood up, and then Micah Fitzpatrick comes in.
Someone comes in.
And
boom.
Gets the knee.
Yep. So anyway, I just want to finish on this. So I know I've done this in the past, and I was like, are they going to do it? I know when we've had people call in and are like, yeah, I played football in college. And my first reaction is like, no, you didn't. I'm thinking it, you know, but this guy was like, he was really doing a good job of breaking it down. And even after he made some good points, Freddie Coleman stops him, but in a like a Freddie way, as opposed to a Cofield way, because I would sound like a jerk, like, oh yeah, where'd you play? And he said Rhode Island, which, okay, he played, you know, Division I or whatever it is, FCS football. But I knew what Freddie was getting at, even after he made a good point. But like, Freddie's delivery was good, and he got the guy's like, oh, you know, Rhode Island, I played there. He's like, oh, good, 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 okay, good for you. And then he made sure to cover up at the end. He's like, great points, great points. I'm like, I know what you're doing, Freddie. Because a lot of people call in and say, you know, well, they'll do like, I played in high school. Like, well, Harry Douglas is here. And I know you played running back and he was a wide receiver. We're going to listen to Harry today. You know what I mean? You get me?
It's fair. A little more credibility.
Yes. Okay. So what's our wish here? That the Browns can scoop Kareem Hunt out of the bargain bin, which I hope Kareem Hunt is like, no. Not, there's no bargain bin. You already told me to F off. Like, you're going to pay me. Or do they go really gaga? And they have a history of doing this, right? They were like, hey, we need a quarterback. Oh, the guy's got like 20 civil suits. We don't care. He's not coming anyway. We have to overpay him. So do they go and get Johnny Taylor? Or do they call up the Raiders and they're like, hey, what's going on with Josh Jacobs? Can they be duped into giving up high-level picks for a running back for the rest of the year?
I doubt. No, not high-level picks. They'll take on somebody's problem. Like, hey, seventh-round pick for Cam Akers? Okay.
But they're not going to – well, I don't believe Ursay wants to trade. I don't think Ursay wants Taylor to play or get anything for him. I think he just wants to stick it to him.
Yeah, but I think if you –
like, when anyone calling the Colts, the Colts are going to be like, yeah, we'll take a second and a fourth conditional up to a one.
if they can actually get something for Taylor, I think they would do it. I just don't think they're actually going to get anything for him. And I think the Colts, look, as good as Jonathan Taylor is, like, Zach Moss looks pretty good. I think they'll be okay with that. But, yeah, Taylor is a good player. But I don't think they're going to give him up for nothing.
Right.
Like, I don't think they'd take a six-round pick for him. But if somebody offered a second, I'm sure they would.
Browns won't do it. You trust them?
I don't think so. Because I do think they'll get Kareem Hunt. Who knows the system, has been around, they trust him, they know everything about him.
That is the worst.
Why?
Because I don't feel like he should have to go back to them. Like, if he does, he better get paid major money. I wanted him just, like, just sit out.
He's getting nothing right now.
No, not sit out the whole year, but sit out and go to a good team.
Browns are a good team.
Are they?
Yeah. I think they are.
All right. I'll have my new configuration of the pecking order of AFC North in a couple of minutes.
You can't. Nobody possibly watched that game last night and thought the Steelers were better than the Browns, right?
No, I don't think either one of them is very good.
No, the Browns are better than the Steelers.
Okay, so one team's a 9-win team, the other's 8.
Sure, but I think the Browns could be better. I mean, I still think Deshaun Watson is still getting up there.
The key is the Browns thinking they're a lot better, like they're a 12 or 13-win team. And the Browns, listen, on this AFC North thing, the Browns could look around and go, all right, we just lost this close game, but that was because we lost Chubb.
And give up two defensive touchdowns.
And we had some weird plays go down against us. Bengals are reeling right now.
Yeah.
We know what's going to happen with Burrow. Are the Ravens really good? I don't know. Like, the Browns could be kind of full of themselves and go, yeah, you know, let's make that trade for a big time running back.
Well, I think if they get Kareem Hunt, that's the start. I don't. Why would you need a running back? Like, you've got guys on your roster right now anyway. The running game was fine after Chubb left yesterday.
Ford was really good, and they busted off a couple of chunk plays. Let me go back to yesterday. I don't know. Did you see the video I put out a little earlier? We talked. Zach Wilson, and I refuse
Your
to put
boy?
My face. I refuse to put my face on the video, so it's just a blank. My spot is blank.
I saw you turn the camera off.
Yeah, my spot is blank, and I likened it to I now have a bag on my head over Zach Wilson. What if could I sell the Jets brass on sign Kareem Hunt to screw over the Browns, and then just run Wildcat and all three guys rotate a quarterback, all three of the running backs. Let's get more running back depth.
Sure.
Hackett'll have no choice. You take it out of Hackett's hands. You don't have a guy who can throw. Run every G-damn play. Or else. Every once in a while, we'll let you run a halfback option.
Well, they could have run.
You have three guys now. Run, just run all the time. Lots of Wildcat. Come up with alternate Wildcats.
If they want to do that, they could have just elevated Bam Knight, and then they lost him like an hour ago. So
the Browns are going to get Kareem Hunt.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Okay. Could the Raiders get Kareem Hunt? Could they look better on offense than they did against the Bills?
I mean,
can they get something?
Somebody will have to block.
What was your read on the game? Why did it flop so badly after the first quarter?
Well, the game went exactly how I thought it was going to go. So it's
what? What?
I said under my breath, "Oh, shut up!" But continue.
It's true. It's
no,
true,
no,
though.
I want you.
It's true.
It's a radio show.
As I said all week.
I want to hear it.
I was saying all week. I thought they were going to get crushed.
You're the Raiders guy in the show. We didn't have you on all week.
I didn't know
you said that they were.
I thought
they were
going into a hornet's nest. I thought it was going to be. Well, first of all, I thought DeMar Hamlin was going to play just for the emotion that they would announce him so the crowd could get even more worked up. But it was a loud crowd. They were ready for the game. They were excited for it. And the Bills were obviously angry about losing to a backup quarterback in a game that they should have won. So I just thought that the Raiders were going into a very, very, very difficult situation. But it turned out they played okay early. To me, in the game story that I wrote was everything changed on one play. The Raiders were in total control of the game. They went down and scored a touchdown, got a three and out, got the ball back, got a first down, and then that screen pass that went awry was so bad, and they never recovered from it. The Bills scored right away, stopped them, got the ball back, scored again. The game was over, and everything turned on that screen pass.
Devon, I know you like the Raiders going in, so what happened?
I mean, he's not wrong about what he said. So
don't get all sour.
No, I'm not getting
sour.
You're
going to lose a lot of bets this
for
year.
Me, I knew,
on top of that, don't get sour about the Raiders.
For me, I knew that the game was over when Nate Hobbs had the holding penalty in the end zone with Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, it should not have been a pass interference. I thought the game was over at that, like already before that, but yeah, it should not
that's
have been.
That's where like, oh, they're not coming back from this.
Yeah.
That was the moment for me.
That was offensive interference.
Because I thought it was good defense. And I was like, hey, if they're not going to let them get away with that, they're not going to beat them just straight up. You know, can't win when the refs are against you, too.
On the way back, we're going to hear from Mick Lombardi, the OC. some comments on what happened in the rest of the game after the beginning was pretty decent. We got great tickets to give away right now. There is a tremendous concert coming up in just a couple of weeks. It's Power Trip. We've got two tickets for all 3 days. It's at the site of Coachella in Indio, California. The lineup is Guns N' Roses, Iron Maiden. Saturday, it's AC/DC, Judas Priest. Sunday, Metallica and Tool. You can get your tickets at powertriplive.com. Right now, 3 days of concerts with some of the legends of hard rock and metal. 364-1100, 364-1100. Tickets to Power Trip Live. Go to powertriplive.com to get your tickets. We've got two tickets for all 3 days. Damon, we'll hook you up. Caller 7-364-1100.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio on ESPN Las Vegas.
We're having too good a time talking off the air. Damon's like, let's go. All right, we're back. Cofield and Company here on a Tuesday. We'll have another set of Power Trip Live tickets later in the show. By the way, there's a lot going on with the Aces here in between series. We're going to talk to Nikki Fargus around 3:45, president of Las Vegas. Adam Hill is here. It's Cofield. Damon as well. So the offense just fell apart for the Raiders. Did not work after the initial success. There were some key plays that kind of derailed them, and then they fell apart. Mick Lombardi spoke. I want to hear from Mick on a couple of things. First of all, he explains here what was the difference from the beginning of the game, the first drive, and the rest of the game against the Bills on offense.
We did a good job, first of all, taking care of the football on the first drive, which helped. And then the next couple of drives, we just, you know, commit penalties or turn the football over and get negative plays. And that just isn't going to sustain drives. Missed opportunities in the passing game or running game. We took advantage of the opportunities early on the drive with a screen to Devontae, you know, with screen to Josh. And then you get some chunks. And then it comes into, you know, getting a negative play in the running game and then missing an opportunity in the passing game. That presents problems in terms of sustaining drives and scoring points. So I think overall we have to do a better job of just making sure we have positive plays and taking advantage of the opportunities that present themselves.
Positive plays are good. The rushing numbers for Josh Jacobs, that was rough.
Oof.
Did you see the number? Von Tobel brought it up yesterday. So he finished. Did he finish with 9 carries and negative 2 yards?
Yeah.
Did you see the number, yards, average yards after contact?
No.
He gained 1.3 yards after contact, but he finished the game with negative 2.
That's not good. That means you're getting contacted way farther back in the backfield.
Like smashed 5 yards behind the line and still tried to make it work.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
It didn't.
And that's not his fault. That means he has no chance to gain yards.
Yeah. I mean, you're fighting just to get back to the line of scrimmage. That's not going to equate to a successful running game, no matter who you are. I mean, it's, you know, you've got to at least get into space a little bit. And even if you're going to break tackles, that's fine. But you want to break 1, 2, 3, 4 yards down the field and then try to turn it into something big. You're just trying to fight and claw just to get to the line.
That's just a miracle to get back.
Not going
to
be successful.
All right, there are positives and head scratchers at receiver. So Trey Tucker, there's something there. Lombardi talked about some of the good things that Tucker did against the Bills.
You're really happy for that young man, you know, going out there and playing and executing his job and playing fast and playing free. You know, any young receiver or any young player in general, you know, can kind of have some trouble in terms of just playing at his level of speed you see in practice, because he gets in the game and things are moving different and stuff. And I was really proud of the way he performed in terms of just going out there and doing his job fast and not worrying about anything else and just playing his game. That was really what I was most excited to see from him. And he made a great catch on the sideline, was called a penalty, then obviously picked up, but he did a great job of going up and getting it and just playing fast. And you saw his speed in the speed sweep, and we got in the ball in space, and he did something with it, which I was really happy with, and I think the whole unit was. Excited to see him kind of, you know, you guys saw him play in the preseason and make some plays. So it was really nice to see him play in the, you know, this past game and get some production. That young man works really hard. Fit right into the receiver room with Jacoby and Devontae and those guys who are grinders and really master their craft. So he fits in very well, and, you know, he's grown every week he's been here, which we've been very pleased with. And hopefully he'll continue to do that moving forward.
Adam, what do you think of Tucker? What do the players think of Tucker?
He has speed. He brings some explosiveness to an offense that really needs it, for sure. But he also was inactive last week. I mean, he was only active because Jakobi Meyers was hurt. And that's something he talked about after the game. He said, look, I know even after this, probably going back to being inactive once Jakobi's healthy.
Doesn't hurt his cause, though. He's opened some eyes. Yeah. And then the other question is, I mean, I figured Tucker at some point was going to be the Renfro replacement. And to this point, I assume Hunter Renfro can still play. I mean, the guy's 2 years removed from a 100-catch season. Last year was cut down a lot by injuries. Here's Mick Lombardi today talking about Hunter Renfro and the lack of production.
I think just overall, in terms of the passing game, we have to obviously stay on the field a little bit more on third down and sustain drives and present more opportunities on drives moving forward. So, you know, the coverage can dictate one thing and the ball goes to a certain player, you know, and or we misread something at quarterback or we miss a blitz pickup. All those factor into the passing game, you know. So over two games, it is what it is. We always look to get everybody involved. Hunter was a big part of the game plan in week 1 and week 2, and every player in the skill position will be in week 3. So he's not deterred. We're not deterred. We're just going to go out there and keep going and try and get some production. And it really, at the end of the day, we care about team production, not individual production. So if we're 7 of 8 on third down and he doesn't have a target or Devontae doesn't have a target, they'd much rather win the game than, you know, get the individual production. But you're right, we have to do a better job of sustaining drives and getting more plays in games, therefore more targets and more opportunities come up throughout the game.
No, me and the ref was having a conversation. There was no contact with the ref. No, we were having a conversation. Yeah, there was no contact with the ref, yeah.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio.
All right, this is a show that absolutely does not embrace officiating. But you hear the voice here, Deshaun Watson. There was some sort of encounter with an official that made the official uncomfortable. What'd you say?
I mean, officials being officials. Like, what? It's not – you're not supposed to feel comfortable, first of all. You're supposed
Are
to
you
do
sure?
your job. You're supposed to do your job.
Who was the official? We got to look in the notes. Who was the official that someone came over to – was it Geno Smith was complaining, was trying
I'm
to get –
I'm talking
clear.
To America.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm talking to America. I'm like, that is a fireable offense. Who do you think you are? You are an official. Jesus. It's friggin' Matthew McConaughey being all dramatic as a ref. I'm talking to America.
To America here.
Turn off the mic. I'm not done with you. They can wait. The job is on the field. You're not a TV star, jackass.
Look, you know you can't touch an official. Like, he was also getting in between. Like, you're inserting yourself in that position. So I think that does have to be weighed into the issue. And by the way, they didn't flag him. I mean, yeah. They did for the grabbing of the face mask, but not for pulling an official out of the way.
That's so ridiculous.
I don't want to say pushing or shoving, as has been mentioned, but officials. There's a lot of very good ones. So I feel like we missed. You know, we don't say that when we're right. talking about this, but a lot of them are like it's about them. They're trying to make it about them. They're trying to be part of the show. You're not. You're not. You have nothing to do with why people watch the game.
Nope.
Just do your job. We should never know who you are. Just do your job.
I'm talking to America.
And don't insert yourself into a spot and then be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, you got in between them.
Everyone used to get mad at Gene Steratore, right? He's the official now who's basically agrees with everything officials do on the field. I think he's with CBS. And he was also a college basketball ref. There's like 25 Steratores. And most of them don't get on mic. But if they have a chance to talk on the sidelines to the coaches and the players, oh, they love it.
Love it.
Like, you're not there to talk to people. Be a robot. Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah.
We don't need funnies from you.
If, like, I'm all for the robot strike zones.
Look at the monitor starts getting worried.
I'm all for the robot strike zones. I'd be all for computers and robots calling everything if we could.
No
tennis,
emotion.
You know how great tennis is now?
Yep, there's no arguments. Nothing. Almost nothing.
Here's the machine.
Yeah, that's it right there. You want to do a replay? Here's a replay.
The occasional, what was it, Coco Gauff was mad that the chair umpire was allowing the other girl more time than she was. Like,
right.
Those things, like, okay.
Illegal snacks, sure. Point off. But there's no the days of McEnroe and whatever female player you want to talk about flipping out, that doesn't happen
anymore. It was out? Really? Here's the thing.
I mean, it was entertaining, but it was annoying after a while. McEnroe actually used it as a as a tactic to slow down the match and F up the opponent.
Yeah. Now it's like, okay, it's in. Okay, we're moving on.
Yep. A pecking order now in the AFC North. It's completely changed after 2 weeks. That's the way the NFL works. We have to react. Ready? 1 Ravens, 2 Steelers, 3 Bengals, Browns 4th, last place.
Steelers. The only one we know is the Steelers are the worst. That's the only thing we know after two weeks.
Tomlin will work his magic. I know it looked sloppy last night and the week before, and it seems like the era of a defensive head coach being elite without an elite OC, it's here. So I think Tomlin's got to smarten up a little bit. And let's be realistic here. I know that there were not many people on the show who were completely bought in on Kenny Pickett, and this is still a work in progress. And they didn't have Deontay Johnson.
Kenny Pickett stinks.
I'm not willing to say he stinks yet, but I wasn't blown away by what he produced last year, and I think a lot of people took that like, well, you know, developmental season, they're on their way to 10, 11, or 12 wins. Steelers are back. Are they?
Well, it's also we talked about how easy the NFC South is earlier, and that'll help out the Saints. That's exactly what will not help the Steelers. I mean, yeah, they got the win last night on 2 defensive touchdowns, were kind of fluky. Like, that's not a game they're normally going to win if you play that 100 times.
Right.
They did not run a single play inside the red zone the entire game. That's wild. That if you replay that game a bunch, the Browns are going to win that the vast majority of the time. The Browns are just a better team. The Ravens are certainly a better team. The Bengals will be a better team. Like, Joe Burrow's hurt. He's not anywhere close to being at full strength, but they'll be a better team. Like, so they're the fourth best team in the division, without question. And what does that mean? I mean, you could still go 8-9, 7-10, even 9-8 as the worst team in that division. But you have 5 more games that are very, very difficult.
So I'm correct on this, right? Come on. Ravens, Steelers, Bengals, Browns. Adam's disagreeing, but he hasn't watched enough football this year.
You got to switch that 2 and that 4. No, 2 and 3. Look at it right. Ravens are clearly number one, though.
What if the Bengals get out to, I don't know, 1 and 5 start?
Have they lost to the Steelers at this point? Because I would still pick them over the Steelers.
Oh, wow.
I was going to hate this. Like, record does not determine who's the better team.
Yeah.
It just does.
I'm saying at the end of the year.
It's still, even at the end of the year, doesn't determine. The Bengals have a much more difficult schedule than the Steelers.
End of the year, the Bengals could be 8 and 9. The Steelers could be 9 and 8. They make the playoffs. Bengals don't.
Right, Bengals are still a better team.
So congrats on the ranking, but you didn't make the playoffs, and you didn't get to go for the Super Bowl.
Sure.
But if you lose in the first round,
because, by the way, the guy who was cranky and rude multiple times, this kid Zach Taylor, on the injury with Burrow, why is he playing the first 2 weeks? Right? Wasn't there speculation, hey, that he's going to sit out 3, 4, 5 weeks to start the season? Now he's come back, and now you've probably messed him up for just as long or longer than the original thought. So cut it with the attitude.
It's very possible that he's going to miss significant time.
They mishandled it. They did.
Yeah.
So be all cocky and rude, but you blew it. And now you might put your team in a hole where they may not make the playoffs.
It's certainly a possibility.
Because I do respect what you said. The division doesn't have easy marks. I don't know that anyone is – anything outside of like 8 to 11 wins, which means that every divisional game is going to be a pain in the ass and could be a grind like this.
And it's going to come right down to the end, you would think. I mean, I do think the Ravens are the best team, but it's going to come right down to it.
The horn sounds, and the game is over. The first round is over as well, too, for the Chicago Sky as the Aces defeat the Sky today in a 2-game sweep.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Finley Toyota studio on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, Cofield and Company, Steve and Adam. DeMond is here as well as we're getting ready for the Aces' next step in the playoffs. It's going to be a little bit of time here, and we'll get the explanation and the format of the WNBA playoffs and what's going on with the Aces with the time off and also that series they just won. She's the president of the organization. Nikki Fargus is up with Cofield and Company here on ESPN Las Vegas. How are you?
Hello, how are you?
We're good. This is kind of a weird time period, isn't it, in terms of the playoffs I hear you laugh in the background there, kind of a lengthy break. So for fans who don't follow the WNBA real closely, what is the format and why is there such a lengthy break now?
Well, the format, round one is the best out of three, and you have one side of the bracket with the number one seed, which was us, playing the first round of games, and then you have the second round of teams playing the second round, and so that allows for there to be a rest period on the back end for those of us who played on Wednesday, while those who played on Friday, they got their rest on the front end. So I think that's probably some justification of it. I know this is a time for us to, you know, get some extra work in to recover. And then once we go to semifinals, both sides of the bracket will be playing, and we'll start on Sunday. So this setup is the best of five when you go to the semifinals, and then the best of five when you go to the final.
I know, rest versus rust is an argument as old as time in sports. Is it a good thing to have rest right now, or would you think the team would rather be out there playing?
I think for us right now, the rest is good. We've had the toughest schedule. If you look at our travel schedule in the WNBA, there were three separate road trips where we had to play four road games in a row. The loss of Candace Parker and our bench being a little bit shorter. I do think that this is a good time for our starters to have some of that recovery that they definitely could not get during the regular season. So one of the things I do know about Becky Hammon and her staff, she's going to have them prepared and ready to go on Sunday. Under the leadership of Asia Wilson, I do think the comfortability of being home helps us for that Sunday matchup, but every game is going to be a battle. And every game we're going to have to come out ready to play some of our best basketball. And that's what we've been doing. And so I do think that there is the, you've been off for 6 days. Can we get a little bit anxious to get back on the court? Yes, but I think once this team settles in, and sticks to the game plan, that they're going to be fine.
That is, of course, Nikki Fargus, president of the defending champion Las Vegas Aces, looking to win back-to-back titles here now that the playoffs have started. I mentioned that defending champion, number one seed, the team everybody's gunning for. How much of a target have you felt has been on this team throughout the season, and now that the playoffs have started, how much extra are teams kind of gunning for you guys?
Well, whenever you're the defending champion, someone's trying to dethrone you, and I've always subscribed to it's harder to stay on top. But this team excelling in every aspect with the number one offense, the efficiency, the field goal percentage, obviously having the number one defense, which we are also equally proud to say that we own that category. But I do think there's teams that are looking at the Aces because they're looking at not only what we're doing on the basketball court, but you also got to take in consideration of what we're doing off the court. The work that we've done in the community, the commitment by Mark Davis in believing in these women and investing in these women with one-of-a-kind, state-of-the-art facility for us to train, recover, rehab, and for us on the business side, we're able to hang our hat on the fact that we led the WNBA in overall attendance. We had over 17,000 at our regular season final game a week or so ago. So there's a lot of great things that we're doing that is setting the tone for what it looks like to be in the league. And I can't say enough about the staff and what the work that we've done in communicating to our community that the Las Vegas Aces are primed to repeat, but we're also appreciative of the support that they've shown throughout the season, and our marketing team has done a phenomenal job. The social engagement, we're leading the league there, and as you can see, the attendance, which I mentioned earlier, to be number one in attendance also says a lot about the work that is done by the team, behind the team.
Next two Aces games are coming up Sunday and then Tuesday. 2 o'clock start over the weekend, 7 o'clock on Tuesday. AXS.com is where you can get the tickets. It's at Mandalay Bay at the Mick Ultra Arena. Let's go back for a second on that fan appreciation finale. What was it like? What was it like in the building? How did you feel, seeing 17,000-plus supporting female basketball?
Wow, that was just really spectacular. And, you know, I mentioned the staff and everything that everyone did to make that happen. And, you know, when you walk into, whether it's Mick Ultra Arena, we obviously played at T-Mobile, the in-game feeling that you come away with is that of it's a show. And thank you to Matt Delson, our COO, who oversees game day operations. DeAndre Duggins does a phenomenal job of working with three-point production. I just think it's one of those things where we're becoming a little bit of the talk of the town, if you will. You got to go take in an Aces game. These women are amazing. They're playing at the highest level, but the entertainment factor is there too. And I love that we really are inclusive in the audience that we want to attract in that building. Under the leadership of Mark Davis, we've priced the building where it's very affordable for families, for kids, for those who would like to get out on a Sunday, hopefully come out this Sunday at 2 o'clock, for it to make it easy for them to do so. Because, you know, I like to bring as many people to the games as I possibly can, and I think what we're seeing is people are telling other people about it. And so now we're getting an influx of new people who are first-timers in our building, and that's only going to just set the culture that we're trying to create here as the Aces being this community's number one WNBA team, but also we want to become America's team because we have so many great personalities on our team. When you look at Kelsey Plum and the fans getting behind, the barking, some of the activations that we have, Miss Twice, Get a Slice, the fans are just very involved, and I feel like they walk away from there feeling like a sense of pride that this is our team.
Miss Twice, Get a Slice is great. It really is. You know, this works at a next level when the players are also really cooperative in terms of getting out there and doing some other stuff and flexing their muscles on all their interests. And I saw you guys had a premiere day for a show coming up on Fubo Sports. Can you tell us what that was all about?
Well, the one thing that I will say, you know, we talk about we got a lot of characters on this team. Yeah. And I'll just let you know that the other day the team got together to watch the premiere of Sydney and Teresa Plaisance. Sydney Colson and Teresa Plaisance has a show that they're doing. And it's so great to see these women using their platform not only to create change, but to also advance their careers. And we've got some players that have taken advantage of the endorsements and the sponsorships. You got, you know, a great creative director in Katie Morgan, who captures the behind the scenes of what the Aces looks like. She tells a lot of in-depth stories because we're about storytelling. We want these players to become household names. And so to have these women, again, show everybody who they are outside the uniform, I think people are just falling in love with them.
Well, good deal. We appreciate a couple minutes today. Sorry we were a little bit late, so thank you for being flexible and popping on with us. Thank you for the time, and everyone out there, get your tickets. Sunday, Tuesday games on the way to a potential championship. The Aces are back later in the week. Thank you so much, Nikki Fargus.
Thank you.
There you go. Asia Wilson has a book coming out.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's good. They're taking advantage of the fact that they are very high-profile athletes now.
How many times would you reward the crowd with a slice as the opposition in front of a big crowd? You would freak.
Never.
You'd have a complaint about the building.
Never.
Something about the rims. It's
as
lower.
Long as they don't change it at the
shooting
last
background's
minute.
Not right. Yeah, the net's not long enough.
Yeah, if we went out there and it was like, all right, here's the basket, and then I'm going to the free throw line, and they're like, all right, it's going to be 9 feet now. Like, okay, now I'd have a problem.
Yeah.
But if you know the situation, then you that's what you do.
These are longstanding memories from we had a listener three-point shooting contest against staffers in the past. Probably, what do you think it was? Probably 10 years ago, at least now.
Yeah.
At least. And Adam came out and just bombed out from three.
Well, it was a three.
Just did not do well. They changed something.
It was a three-point contest, and it was like, all right, the top like six are going to advance. Like, all right, cool. Go out there and just make enough to advance. Like, actually, it's just the top two. Like, wait, what? What?
He crumbled under the pressure.
Like, you just have to qualify, and that's not what happened.